This episode is brought to you by the 5-Day Money Challenge. Get your stuff together with money and increase your confidence in just 5 days. Save your seat at whitneyhanson.com/moneychallenge and join in on the fun. Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hanson, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I have a very, very important message for you guys today. This is something that I've been thinking about for a little while. And honestly, it's came to fruition kind of through a lot of internal reflection. So this whole concept of your network equals your net worth, I think we've all known that and we all kind of agree with it, I would say, as a whole. But I've kind of been thinking a lot, and I don't feel like your network is enough. I feel like there's something missing there. So I would actually say that it's not necessarily your network equals your net worth. I think it's your self-worth equals your net worth. And I've been thinking about that a lot more in my own personal life and how that has impacted me. And it's just a concept that I'm really interested in right now. So this episode is going to be focused all about that. So how do you build up a positive self-worth so that you feel like you can actually do really cool things in life, that you deserve the raise, that you deserve the financial progress, you deserve to be debt-free. When you have that whole mindset of, I have a better life for me, I deserve more than just what I'm living right now, I think that's when you start to accumulate a lot of net worth. I really do. So that's why today's episode is so interesting to me, because I brought on a really important person in this whole concept of self-worth and positive self-talk. So before I dive into our guest today, I want to share a quick money win with you guys. This is a really fun one. So this money win comes from the private Facebook group, and it comes from Jesse. Jesse says, for the remainder of the year, we are focusing on credit card debt. We've started with paying off around $1,800 this month. We are also working on budgeting our living expenses for 1.5 incomes and having the other portion going towards paying off debt. Hashtag money win. Congrats, Jesse. That is so awesome that you were able to pay off $1,800 so far. That's killer progress. So keep up the great work. And yeah, living on 1.5 income will really pay off tenfold in the long run. So stick it out. You're on the right track for sure. All right, let's talk about today's guest. Today's guest is a psychotherapist. Her name is Lisa Ferrance. Lisa Ferrance has over 30 years, guys, in private practice experience, and she's the founder of the Ferrance Institute. You can go check out her blog post, her videos, all of her really cool resources on the ferranceinstitute.com. She empowers those struggling with personal and professional obstacles with strategies that they need to grow and to thrive, and provides compassion and guidance for using the tools that we already have, which is really cool. We all have these tools at our disposal, and she helps show us how to overcome issues, struggles, anything that's holding us back in our lives. So it could be professionally or personally, it doesn't matter, but that overlap is really important. So there's definitely an overlap between your personal life and your professional life, and whether we like it or not, that also impacts our own financial life. So be really, really careful of that. She's actually the author of a really sweet book called Finding Your Ruby Slippers, Transformative Lessons from the Therapist's Couch. So if you've ever been curious about what do therapists actually hear? Like, well, what kind of stuff are they getting? That book will talk a lot about that kind of stuff. And it has really great messages. And a lot of those messages we're going to talk about today. In this episode, we talk about 3 common messages we tell ourselves throughout the day. The importance of self-talk and how to change the tone from a negative tone to a positive tone, strategies to help you overcome obstacles like low self-esteem, lack of confidence, and even codependency. And we tie all of this into how it directly impacts your financial life. And again, how I believe it impacts your net worth. So be really, really careful of that. It all begins in your mind. So if you don't have the right mindset, you're not going to accumulate a lot of wealth. You just won't. All of this, guys, and so much more. I am so excited to introduce you to Lisa Ferrance, founder of the ferranceinstitute.com. Welcome back, guys, to another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Today, I am joined by a very special guest. I have Lisa Ferrance with us. Lisa is amazing. So if you have ever struggled with negative self-talk or feeling like you're just not quite good enough, this episode is for you. We're going to talk about that. And we're also going to touch on why that plays a role in your financial life. So Lisa, thank you very, very much for being here. I'm so excited to connect with you.
Thank you, Whitney. I'm delighted to be with you.
So take us back. Give us all the, who is Lisa? What do you do? Give us that kind of stuff so we have a better insight of who you are and what you do.
Sure. So I am a clinical social worker, and I've been in private practice for about 33 years. My specialty is working with trauma and all of the kind of the reverberating impact of trauma. So people who are grappling with certainly issues of self-worth and self-esteem, depression, anxiety, engaging in self-destructive behaviors. And the other thing we see a lot is that folks who come from a trauma-based history tend to gravitate towards relationships that can be abusive, and workplace environments and careers that can be actually pretty unfulfilling, environments that can actually be somewhat toxic. And if you've grown up with trauma, it can be very difficult to extricate yourself from those environments, not because you're masochistic, but because it kind of resonates for you, you know, it's familiar. So I do a lot of that work in my private practice. I also am in my 10th year with my institute, which is the Ferenc Institute, where we train mental health professionals around the state-of-the-art treatment of trauma, as well as other issues that clients, you know, are looking to get guidance with mental health professionals. And I travel around the world training and giving lectures and keynote addresses, and just finished my third book, which is part of why you and I are connecting today.
Yes, I'm so excited too. Your third book's called Finding Your Ruby Slippers. So what was the inspiration behind that book?
Well, as you can imagine, it's very connected to The Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. So Dorothy spends the whole movie trying to find her way back home and believing that the wizard has the answer. And when she gets to the Emerald City, she discovers that the wizard is just a short guy behind a curtain and he's got no real power. And she's, you know, pretty despondent. But then Glinda appears and she basically says to Dorothy, look down at your own feet. You've been wearing the ruby slippers all along. Mm-hmm. And I love that metaphor as a therapist, because I think it really elucidates the idea that so much of what we need to have inner peace. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's my phone. Is that problematic for you?
Nope, you're good.
Should I pause? Okay. So much of what we need to have inner peace, to make good choices in our lives, to operate from a place of wisdom and self-love, really exists inside of us. It's not like our partner has our ruby slippers, or our boss, you know, or our friends or our kids. So the book is really about helping people to turn inward through a lot of sort of mantras that are supportive, but also through a lot of journaling exercises that helps people to turn inward and begin to access their own inner wisdom and strength. And as a therapist, obviously, that's what I've been trying to do with my clients over the years, is to help them find their own inner wisdom.
I love it. I think that's beautiful. It's something that I think we should all strive towards, honestly, is finding that inner wisdom, tuning into your intuition, that kind of stuff. But it's a lot of times easier said than done. And I think a lot of people that even experience trauma maybe don't really realize that they are self-sabotaging in some ways. So how do we step back and give ourselves like an honest analysis of what are we doing with our lives? Are we getting in our way? Are we helping ourselves? How do we even begin to even get to that point?
So that's a great question, Whitney. And I actually think that you're touching on a key point here, which is the way we talk to ourselves about ourselves. And as a therapist, I actually believe there's nothing more powerful than that. And so as we begin this kind of exploration of trying to understand, am I in fact sabotaging, you know, the successes in my life, whether it's financially, within a relationship, within a career, or am I actually moving forward and making choices that help me to grow professionally, personally, help me to self-actualize? I think a really important place to start is to begin to look at, how do I talk to myself about myself? Mm-hmm. Now, this is such a second nature thing that even though this seems obvious as people hear it, you know, in conversations and podcasts, and they read it in the book, the truth is we just kind of have this monologue that plays all day long. It's normalized for us, no matter how negative it might be. It's our tape. We don't challenge it. We don't question it. We don't reevaluate it, often until we're in therapy. And that can be the very first time that somebody, maybe who's been sort of leading from an inner monologue for 30, 40, 50 years of their life, for the first time they begin to find the courage, because I think it does take courage to say, is it possible that some of the messages on this tape are either inaccurate or don't serve me well, or actually are part of what's sabotaging the successes that I am able to achieve in my life. So step one is really just acknowledging that you do in fact have an inner monologue, mm-hmm. and then becoming curious without shaming and without judgment, becoming curious about what are some of the most common messages that I tell myself throughout the day. Mm-hmm. That in and of itself can be a very eye-opening exercise for people to engage in, just to really start to pause and to notice. You know, and I often say to my clients, I want you to begin to journal about the top three messages that you hear in your head day in, day out. And as you can imagine, those messages are often incredibly self-effacing. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be anything from I'll never amount to anything, to I better not take this risk because I'm going to fail, to people pretend to love me, but they really don't. Yeah. So these, right, yeah, I mean, these are powerful messages, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about the way we talk to ourselves is that it profoundly impacts so many other arenas of our life. So all of the other subsequent thoughts that I have are going to flow from that core tape. My emotions are going to flow from that tape. If I'm going the whole day in and out saying to myself, I'll never amount to anything, you can imagine the emotions that that's going to evoke in me, the depression, the anxiety, right? The lack of, you know, the inability to feel hopeful or to be optimistic. So it impacts our thoughts, it impacts our feelings, and then it impacts all of our behavioral choices, the risks that we take or don't take, whether, again, that's financially or within a relationship, within a career. So all of those behavioral choices flow from these core messages that we give ourselves. And that's why it's so important to begin to become curious about what do I say to myself all day long?
Right. And so it sounds like the suggestion you gave for us to start to become aware of that is to A, just listen and be aware, and then journaling.
Yes. Right. And you can start, look, there's lots of ways in. It can be, what are the three most common things that you're hearing in your head all day long? Because they, you know, we tend to kind of cling to four or five core messages that really kind of lead us through the day. But there are other kinds of specific questions that we can encourage people to think about and or to journal about that I think will shed light on that monologue, right? That inner tape they have in their head. So questions that I sometimes ask my clients to think about include things like, how do you approach goals? Do you approach them optimistically? Do you approach them pessimistically? How do you approach the challenges that show up day in and day out? Right? Again, do you approach them with a sense of, I can do this. This challenge actually is a great opportunity. Or do you see challenges as an obstacle? You know, and maybe an obstacle that's going to be insurmountable. You know, this is, well, now I'm screwed kind of feeling, you know, when you're faced with a challenge. I ask people to think about, how do they evaluate the accomplishments that they have? A lot of the clients that I work with tend to downplay their successes, and they actually tend to exaggerate their mistakes. As you can imagine, that's a pretty powerful combination of things, right?
Yeah, that's a dangerous combination.
Yeah. Right. You sort of can't win. So getting people to think about, you know, do you give yourself credit for the successes and the accomplishments in your life? Do you tend to attribute those successes and accomplishments to something outside of you? Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's luck or, well, I had a great financial advisor and that's why I'm doing so well, right?
Right.
Rather than really noticing, you know, the risks that you took, the courage that you expended, the thought process, the intuition, instincts, as you said, you know, that people listen to and engage in. So who gets the credit in your life and who gets the blame in your life? You know, because that's very connected to self-talk as well. I also ask my clients to think about the tapes that are connected to, do you feel worthy of your successes? Do you feel worthy of your financial success? Do you feel worthy of the dollars in your bank account? Do you feel worthy of the loving, safe relationships that you have in your life? Do you feel worthy of the fact that you just got a promotion or, you know, a raise at work? Because if you don't feel worthy, if it doesn't resonate that, yes, I deserve this stuff because I've worked hard, because I've got a lot to bring to the table, you know, because I do have strengths and gifts that matter. If you don't feel that way, that's when you're going to begin to sabotage some of the successes that you're having in life. And then I ask people to think about the tape that guides them in terms of the way people treat them. Do those messages support the idea that you deserve to be treated with respect? You deserve to be treated with kindness. You know, how low or how bar? Sorry, how low or how high is the bar in terms of what's acceptable and unacceptable? In terms of how people speak to you, how they treat you, because if it's a really sort of high bar where people can get away with whatever they want, you're more likely to go through life hurt. That's going to profoundly impact, again, your sense of self-worth and self-esteem. The lower your threshold for things that are unacceptable, the more you can begin to self-advocate, the more you can be self-protective. So there's another great question. You know, what's the extent to which you can use your voice to advocate for yourself? You know, to either tell people what you need, tell people what you want, or let people know that when what they're doing is unacceptable to you. Wow. So those are, you know, I threw a lot at you, but
no,
those are
great.
You get the idea. Those are some of the more specific questions that we can encourage people to start looking at and thinking about. And that's going to help them understand the messages on that inner tape and the way they're talking to themselves about themselves.
This is so fascinating. It seems like to start off, you have to become aware, of course, but then how this lack of awareness. So if you listen to this or you come across some of Lisa's stuff and you're like, ah, I'm going to worry about this in 5 years. Like it's not right now. It's not the right time. This stuff I can imagine compounds too.
Great point, Whitney. You're exactly right. It really does. And so, you know, I love working with younger people because I feel like we're sparing them 30 years of suffering.
Thank goodness.
Right? Which is a great thing. But, you know, I have to say, it's also very poignant. I have clients who are, you know, in their 50s and 60s and even a client in his 70s. It's actually quite extraordinary to see how really it's never too late. And people who, you know, maybe really sabotaged a lot of their life and spoken to themselves in very harsh and critical ways for 30, 40 years, it's never too late for them to embrace a new way to talk to themselves, to again, extricate themselves from the relationships and the situations that are toxic, unkind, even abusive, and really and reclaim their lives. So you're absolutely right to suggest, you know, the longer you wait, the more there's this cumulative effect. Yeah. But I think it's important to give your listeners the message that the great news is it's never too late to be looking at this stuff and to be making really profound changes in your life.
So it seems like I'm with you, like completely. It just sounds awesome. And I think everybody wants to work on their positive self-talk. But honestly, it sounds like a lot of work. It really does. It sounds like we're going to be working our ass off trying to get all this stuff done. Is that true? Is it? How much work are we talking about here?
Well, you know, it really, that's a very personal choice. So as a therapist, you know, the thing that I am very clear about with my clients is I can't make you do anything. I don't want to make you do anything. Right. Every step of the way, this has to feel like you are making authentic choices and choices that you want to make. And certainly the more motivated you are, the harder you're willing to work. Right. And so, you know, folks who land in my office are people who are suffering quite a bit and have tried a lot of other routes, you know, self-help books and talking to friends, talking to clergy. And those are all really good things to do. And, you know, when you reach a place where you've tried all those things and you're still either experiencing depression, anxiety, not where you want to be in your life, unhappy in your career, not where you financially have a sense of security and safety, I think those become very motivating things. And believe it or not, people are willing to work hard. The irony of what you're asking is that people work hard beating themselves up. It actually, you know what I mean? It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of effort and energy to talk to yourself in destructive, shaming, critical ways. It takes a tremendous amount of effort to be perfectionistic. And so as you begin to do this work, you actually get freed up because you discover that you don't have to be perfect. and that it is okay to make mistakes. And all those hours of energy that you expended beating yourself up because you made a mistake, you let go of. So it's like energy that used to go to one place that's not particularly productive can get rechanneled, you know, into areas of your life where you really get a payoff.
Yeah.
You know, in your world, it's all about return on investment, right?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. So listen, in my world, it's about return on investment too. And it's looking at, you know, what's the return that you're getting by beating yourself up? Mm-hmm. How much energy are you putting in and what are you getting out? Mm-hmm. And versus, you know, the energy that you put into learning to talk to yourself in kinder ways, becoming more aware of the negative tapes, pausing and reframing the negative thoughts. You know, what's the return on investment with that? It's huge. It's huge. Because here's the funny part. It feels so much better to talk to yourself with kindness than it does to talk to yourself and beat yourself up, you know?
Yeah. I love this. I think this is so awesome because I'm already seeing, I teach college personal finance as well. So I'm an adjunct professor.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun, but I'm seeing right now all of the students are either getting ready to graduate or will be in December. And they're looking at their ability to get a job and they're like, you know, I'm not qualified. Why would they choose me over somebody that has more experience? And this, to me, it all comes down to self-talk as well. Like what are you teaching yourself? What are you telling yourself? And ultimately, what do you actually believe? So this is kind of an interesting question because I'm really curious. Do you see, is this gender specific? Like, do women tend to downplay their successes more than men? That kind of stuff. Does this happen in one gender more than the other?
So it's actually a great question. I think the average person would automatically come to the conclusion this is clearly an issue more for women, right? Yeah. I think historically that's what we would think, that women struggle more with confidence and self-esteem. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting is that in my practice, my caseload has always been 50% men.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which is really fun. And I love working with men. But so the way that I'm going to answer your question is I don't think it's so much about gender anymore. I think it's about the whole cumulative impact of our past experiences in life. So what I mean by that is I work with so many men who were neglected, traumatized, abused, and they're holding that same lack of confidence, that same lack of self-worth and self-esteem, that same sort of startled reaction when people do want to hire them, because it doesn't resonate with their core sense of self, that we would historically say that women feel about themselves. And I work with a lot of women who are absolute dynamos, who have incredible confidence, you know, and absolutely know how to put their best foot forward and are not afraid to talk about their strengths. So I don't think it's so much about gender. I think it's more about the history that you come with, the messages. You know, you and I have been talking about this tape, so to speak, this monologue. What I think is worth pointing out to your listeners is that the tape that we all have in our heads, we don't get by accident. Those messages have their roots in our family of origin experiences. So in other words, we talk to ourselves the way the people we loved and trusted spoke to us. And we did not question those messages. If you grew up in a family where your father told you every day that you were an idiot and you were never going to amount to anything, because it was your father, you trusted that. You know, you assumed he was speaking the truth about who you are. And so then you sort of pick up where he left off, and you continue to tell yourself those same messages. Again, it's often not until people come into therapy that they're given the opportunity to even begin to question the legitimacy and the accuracy of those messages from dad. And as a therapist, I'm asking questions like, you know, is it possible that your dad was wrong? Is it possible that he was looking at you not through an objective, loving lens, but through his own trauma? You know, because maybe his dad told him every day of his life that he was a moron, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think the extent to which people do or don't have confidence in the workforce, in the workplace, is not so much about gender anymore. I think it used to be for sure. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to completely downplay that. And frankly, women who I work with who are in their 50s and 60s, I think do still hold to some degree those earlier stereotypical, you know, messages and biases. But I work with a lot of women in their 20s, 30s, 40s. I mean, they don't buy that crap, which is awesome. You know, they absolutely do not see any difference between what they bring to the table and what a man can bring to the table. But again, I think that the core of self-worth and self-esteem is how you were raised, how you were treated, whether or not you were loved, whether or not you were validated, whether or not your thoughts and feelings were honored and respected. That's how you come to decide who you are in the world and what you do and don't deserve. But again, the cool thing about therapy is that you can make a new tape. Right. You don't have to, right? You don't have to keep buying into what I call the childhood propaganda of an abuser.
That's great. I love that.
So that's the exciting thing about, you know, my work is that people, it's remarkable to watch people make these really courageous decisions that say, this tape is a bunch of BS and I'm not buying it. It was actually never accurate. Now I'm really pissed that I spent 30 years of my life listening to it, you know? Totally. So there's grief. Yeah. So there's anger that comes up. There's grief that comes up that really has to be attended to. But then we start to make that new tape and it's really exciting.
That's amazing. And I'm just thinking so much of just the financial implications, of course, but more than anything, it's about living a fulfilled life, like being in a life that you are enjoying and you love. And that's kind of the real goal here. And yeah, money's just a tool to help you get there. But if you're self-sabotaging on the back end, you don't quite realize you're not going to take as many risks. You're not going to go for that promotion. You're not going to apply for your dream job because you just don't think that you're good enough or whatever your tape might say. So I think that's really cool. And I've got down now to start journaling, start becoming more aware of that. So hypothetically, 4 to 5 core messages is what we tell ourselves usually. Right. So if we're looking at the top three and say one of the top three is a very positive one, which I can imagine maybe sometimes happens, and yeah, the other two are maybe garbage. How do you start like reprogramming at least like one of those things? Do you tackle all of them at once? Do you choose just one? Like how do you do this?
So great question. I think it certainly is less daunting to tackle one at a time.
It seems that way.
Yeah, I think that I would go with that too. I think that makes sense. You know, the key thing about this though, which may or may not seem intuitive, mm-hmm, is most people, when they access a message that they finally understand, wow, you know, this has really been getting in my way. Mm-hmm. What they want to do is immediately kick it to the curb. They get pissed off at it. They, you know, it's like, I want to cut it out of my head. I want to cut it out of my life. And I will tell you that actually that does not work.
No kidding. And
right. It does not work because what you're really doing there is you're generating more internal upset and you're creating more internal dissonance between the part of you that, you know, believes that you are worthy. And there's a part of you, probably a much younger part, that may hold some trauma or some unmetabolized experiences, mm-hmm, that is still to some degree kind of grappling with, well, but maybe this is a little bit true, you know? So the answer is not to just, quickly get rid of it. Okay. What I encourage clients to do is actually bring empathy and compassion to that negative thought. Mm-hmm. To even say things like, you know what? It makes sense that I've thought this. Now, that's not the same thing as agreeing with the thought, right? That's not colluding with the thought. But it is important to say, I understand why I would have a thought like this. Because, Whitney, see if this makes sense to you. If instead I just get pissed off at it and I want to get rid of it, what I'm actually generating is more shame.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Right? And my belief is the antidote to shame is, in fact, self-compassion. So when I can be compassionate about those negative messages, actually bring comfort to those negative messages, and again, recognize that, yeah, given what I've experienced in life, given what I was taught, given what was modeled for me, given what I wasn't given or taught,
right,
it's in fact understandable that I don't have a lot of confidence or I struggle with believing that I'm worthy. Mm-hmm. So let me first bring compassion to that reality because that's a byproduct of my trauma, and let me comfort it and let me reassure it and let me calm it down, and then the loving message can really take hold. What we want to avoid is conflict inside, mm-hmm, between the loving messages and the negative messages. We want to work towards cooperation, compassion, comfort. I don't know if this is going to sound hokey to your clients or not, but this really is the way, mm-hmm, to have inner peace. You know, that you can't, we don't want to fight those messages because that evokes shame, that evokes anger, that kind of whips us up. Mm-hmm. And this leads to something that I want to point out also that I think is kind of a very basic misconception with society in general, mm-hmm, that we believe that we can motivate ourselves by shaming ourselves.
Ooh, that's deep.
right?
Yes.
So if I bully myself enough, if I yell at myself enough, if I beat myself up enough, that's going to get me off my ass. That's going to motivate me. And I'm going to achieve everything. And the reality, the honest to God truth is, bullying does not work. All shaming does is feed and fuel the idea that I'm worthless, which is going to set me up to sabotage the successes. So rather than motivating through shame, my whole goal through my books and as a clinician and as an educator is to really help people to embrace this idea that the absolute best way to motivate yourself to succeed is by talking to yourself with kindness and self-compassion and love. That's how we get there.
Oh, that's so cool. This is like so heartfelt. I love this. This stuff is so interesting to me, primarily because I think I've struggled with negative self-talk, and I think we probably all have.
Absolutely.
And still do at some days where I'm like, why did I believe that? Why, what's really going on? And sometimes when you dig into it, it seems so petty and you're like, really? That's why? That's really what I believe. But being able to acknowledge it, be aware of it, and then change it, I think is really a really powerful thing. Okay,
right.
So I think we've talked a little bit about the importance of self-talk. We've got a few steps going for the next, what are we going to do? What are your action steps? So one of the things that you mentioned, and I know we kind of chatted about this before the interview, is kind of like the tone of your voice that you share with yourself. Can you talk to us a little bit about what is that and how do we even recognize the tone of voice we talk to ourselves in?
Sure. Great. And I'm so glad thank you for bringing it up, because sometimes we get pretty focused on the words, you know, like, what am I saying? And we don't give enough weight to how am I saying it? And what I tend to discover when I have clients begin to look at those messages is not only are the messages either harsh or abusive, but the tone is super critical, really blaming, angry, antagonistic, and that kind of fuels and feeds the actual content itself. So not only do we want to pay attention to, you know, what we're saying to ourselves, but we really want to notice, how did I say that? Did I say that, you know, again, because there are people who yell at themselves,
oh, totally.
Right?
And,
you know, so there's that. There's not only am I telling myself I'll never amount to anything, or I'm not worthy of this raise, but I'm like screaming it in my head, you know, and it's demeaning and it's belittling. And as you can imagine, that profoundly impacts our emotional states, you know, to have a voice in your head, because frankly, that voice is with you all the time.
I know, damn it.
But that's why when it's loving and compassionate, you're good to go.
Right.
Because,
right.
You know, when you've got those messages inside that calm you, that reassure you, that comfort you, even when you screw up, that say, you know, it's okay. What can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? Like, that's all forward moving. But if instead I'm yelling at myself and I'm, you know, beating myself up with tone as well as with words, I am just frozen. I am stuck. And I'm never going to move forward in my life. And if anything, I'm going to keep saying no to those great opportunities. As you said, I'm not going to take risks. I'm not going to take healthy chances. I'm not going to surround myself with loving, safe people. I'm going to probably work in an environment where I'm totally unappreciated. I'm probably going to work for a boss who yells at me too, right? Because that's another way in which it gets perpetuated. So listening to the tone, and again, really practicing, could I say that in a kinder, gentler way? And here's some of the tools that I give people to consider in terms of like, well, how do I get there? The easiest thing, believe it or not, when you catch yourself saying something and you hear that it's very demeaning or harsh or cruel, is just to ask yourself, how would I say this to my best friend? How would I say this to somebody I really love and respect? We call this a double standard, Whitney, because it's very obvious. What happens is that as soon as you ask somebody, how would you say that to your best friend, or even how would you say that to a scared child, their tone completely changes. You know, they're compassionate,
yeah.
They're gentle, they're kind, like instantaneously their tone changes. So that's worth looking at. You know, do I talk to myself with the same love and kindness that I talk to with people in my life who I really care deeply about? So that's one way in. Mm-hmm. Another way in is to ask, is to think about somebody in your life who you know really loves and respects you. Mm-hmm. And most people can access at least one person. And it, look, it could be somebody who's deceased. It might not be somebody who's even present in your life, but somebody that you know or knew really loved and cared about you. And ask yourself, how would they say this message to me? And again, they can pretty easily access the kindness and the compassion. Here's my favorite trick, and it's going to sound weird, but it works the best.
I love it.
And that is to ask yourself, how would your dog say it to you? How would your cat say it to you? Because pets are the most unconditional, loving relationships we ever have. And so it's just, it blows me away whenever I say to somebody, well, how would your dog say that to you? And it's just so kind and it's so gentle. You
know, and they have, it's so they have great dogs. Mine's a little jerk.
All right. Well, then let's be careful about the resource. I'm dizzy. We want to use a pet that we know really loves us. Totally unconditionally, yeah. Right? I saw this beautiful sign that I often tell my clients, which is, be the person your dog thinks you are.
That's awesome. That's so
cute. Great? So, you know, but the idea here is to access any resource in your life that where you believe that resource truly loves and respects you. And just kind of take that half a step back and ask yourself, how would that person say it? It's amazing how quickly people can then access the kind tone. So that's the way it
is. So I'm thinking a lot of people are really sarcastic, and I could see sarcasm as a negative too. Is that the case?
Very good for you. Do you have your degree in psychology?
No, not at all. Accounting.
Well, you're very, you've got a high emotional IQ, I would say.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Which is an awesome combination because you're absolutely very high intellectual IQ too.
Well, that's questionable.
Wait a minute. Is there a kinder way you could say that to yourself?
I am very intellectual. Good catch. See, it's like stuff like that.
See, and I don't mean to put you on the spot at all, but isn't it amazing though how kind of insidious it is?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Right. And look what just happened, sweetie. The way in which that often gets activated is when we get complimented.
Oh man.
That's what just happened. So let our listeners, your listeners know, we did not plan that.
Not at all.
That was totally spontaneous. But there it is. When we get complimented, the natural tendency is to want to negate it or downplay it. Mm-hmm. And it is another life practice to learn how to hold and accept the compliments we receive from other people, because that also strengthens our inner tape and those inner messages. So not only is it about learning to compliment ourselves, which is much harder. That's like, I can tell you that for some of my clients, that's a year of therapy right there, honestly. Just, learning how to be able to compliment themselves. But a part of that is learning how to receive and hold and not challenge and not negate the compliments that they get from others in their lives. So there you go. There's
that
a great
is so awesome. I know, like, there you go, guys. This is how this stuff comes out.
That's how it works. So, but I love that's that cool. You asked before that about sarcasm, because you're so right on. And I think sarcasm is a little bit more insidious. You know, people get it if I talk about, like, you're beating yourself up, or, you know, you're being super critical or highly judgmental or flat out shaming. But sarcasm is in that exact same category. And because I think it's very socially accepted, it's part of, it's sort of part of the vernacular of the humor that we use as Americans, that we can get away with being sarcastic.
Right.
But I think it's worth kind of, again, pausing and really asking yourself, you know, what's the intention behind that sarcasm? Is it a way to minimize or downplay who I am and what my accomplishments are? Is it a way to quickly, you know, push away the compliment that I'm receiving from somebody else? So I think understanding, like, the mechanism underneath the sarcasm is really important. And it is a manifestation of not loving ourselves and not talking to ourselves with kindness.
This is so cool. So, okay, I want to hear, what are some of the practices that you do? Do you still struggle with this stuff? And I can imagine it's a lifelong journey. It's not a one and done kind of thing. So what are some of your favorite tools that you personally use?
So I have to first be honest with you and tell you I'm a little bit in the minority in that I am a trauma specialist, but I'm not a trauma survivor. So I grew up in a very safe, loving, incredibly validating family. I'm not better than anybody. I just lucked out. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the tape that I've carried in my head most of my life is very positive, very loving. But that is... Yes. So I lucked out. I think it's part of why I've achieved all that I've been able to achieve in my life, because I really do fundamentally believe in myself and I believe in my worth and I trust people and I believe that they can, that they are inherently kind. Because, you know, when you're traumatized, understandably, you also get suspicious of people and it's hard to trust. It's hard to allow for intimacy and closeness. You kind of go through life somewhat guarded, you know, and protected. And that makes sense. It's just, it can also keep you from closeness and opportunity. So when you don't have those issues, it allows you to kind of walk through life, I think, in a more open way, open-hearted, open-minded way. So I lucked out and I do have that going for me. But listen, I'm a woman and I look in the mirror like every other woman and wish, you know, and I'm almost 60. And so I, you know, gravity there, it's real. You're young and you're gorgeous and you don't know this yet, but gravity is a real thing. And one day you wake up and your body is completely different.
Sure.
And I was a dancer. And so, you know, for me, you know, I've always been so connected to my body. And so, you definitely look in the mirror and grapple with, you know, those negative thoughts, whether it's, I don't like the way this looks or, you know, and I do public speaking constantly. And so you can get, I joke about this, but it's true. You can get 499 glowing evaluations and you can get one crappy evaluation. Yep. And then you got to like stop obsessing about that one crappy evaluation. So the practice though includes things like gratitude. Oh. I go every day of my life grateful, consciously grateful, because I think we have two choices. We're either going to focus on what we don't have or we're going to be grateful for what we do have. Mm-hmm. And when we focus on what we don't have, that can bring up a lot of bitterness and a lot of anger. And when we're grateful for what we do have, what we know about gratitude, which is so awesome, is that it literally changes our brain chemistry in positive ways. So a gratitude practice, I think, is essential. And it's not just a gratitude practice for the external things in my life. It's not just, I'm grateful that I'm financially solvent, or I'm grateful that I have a great career. It's grateful for the stuff that relate to you. You know, I am grateful for the fact that my body still moves. I'm grateful that I can think. I'm grateful that I can access my own creativity. So it's really like tapping into the things about us, you know, that we're grateful for. So I think a gratitude practice is hugely important part of that equation. I also think part of the practice is consciously deciding how much power do I want to give to other people?
It's a good question.
Right. And that's a practice, believe it or not. Mm. It's because we are faced many times throughout the day with making choices about that, whether it's like I just said, am I going to give that one negative evaluation more power and more weight than the hundreds of glowing ones? You know, am I going to let something my boss said to me hold more weight and power than what I know the truth is about my abilities? Am I going to let the fact that my partner doesn't feel well or is in a bad mood or didn't get a lot of sleep, and the fact that he didn't say something particularly complimentary or loving, like, am I going to let that inform how I feel about myself for the rest of the day? Because it could, right?
And a lot of times it does.
And a lot of times it does, because I think we don't stop and make it a practice to be mindful of who's having the power today. Mm-hmm. Am I keeping it for me? Am I giving it away? That's the ruby slippers thing again. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I'm wearing the ruby slippers. I have that power. I'm not going to turn my ruby slippers over to anybody else. I'm not going to let other people define who I am or how I should feel about myself, you know, or my worth. So I think that's a practice that can go a really long way, because we're confronted with that, wouldn't you say, like many times throughout the day, right? You know, just situations that come up where in that moment we have to decide, you know, whose voice is going to win out and whose perception is going to win, and what's the extent to which I'm going to let what happened here define my core sense of self.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. This has been so much fun too. And your book is Finding Your Ruby Slippers. Where do people go? Where's the best place to get this book? Because I know I'm definitely buying it, and I've been geeking out on your videos. So I think it's your work is incredible. It's very needed. So I really do appreciate you putting yourself out there in that way and helping other people. I think it's awesome. But where do people go to find your book?
So, right. They can get all three of my books at Amazon. As a trauma expert, I've done a lot of work also helping people let go of self-destructive behaviors that are often the byproduct of trauma, like eating disorders, addictions, acts of self-mutilation, abusive relationships. So all of my books, including Finding Your Ruby Slippers, they can get at Amazon. And I also want to encourage people to visit my website, which is the Ferenc Institute. com, because as you said, there are a lot of free resources there. There's the archive of my radio show and my blogs and stuff I've written. And Facebook is another great place. The Ferenc Institute on Facebook is another place to get lots of free resources as well as the books. And they can find me on LinkedIn. So, you know, all those usual social, although I don't do Snapchat.
Come on, why not?
I'm too old.
I don't know about that.
but LinkedIn, Facebook, and my website, as well as Amazon, are all great places where you can access my stuff. And I love what you're doing. I appreciate what you're doing. And I think it's really important, as you said, especially for young people, to talk to them about financial security and stability and the choices they make. And I love that you understood how connected that is to self-worth and self-esteem, right?
Yeah.
It's not just about your portfolio. It so flows back to that core sense of self-worth and whether or not you are taking those healthy risks or sabotaging the successes. So I love that you've made that connection in your work. That's really awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it truly all starts with how you talk to yourself. If you have those negative vibes, you could be the most amazing person in the world. But if you don't believe that, you're not going to perform at a level where your financial life will reflect that too. So I am so grateful that you came on today. I think this has been a ton of fun. Everything that Lisa, that you've mentioned will be linked in our show notes. So the books, we'll put links in there. Any videos that are relevant to the conversation, we'll definitely link up. This has been so much fun. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners before we officially part ways?
I just want to again reiterate that we want people to be hopeful. We want people to know that even if it's been a rough first part of their life, that they have lots of power and choice and control for the second part of their life, and that they can still be everything they want to be. And so do reach out for support. I think things like therapy, that's a gift. That's not a sign of weakness. That's a sign of strength. If you don't have access to mental health resources, if you cannot afford therapy, things like my self-help books and other self-help books, I think are hugely helpful and really do help people to make that inward focus, begin to ask the right questions, begin to gain more insight, begin to get those resources for healing. So whatever step you can take, take the next step and know that you'll benefit and know that the sky's the limit in terms of how much you can grow and heal and change.
Oh, this was so much fun. Lisa, thank you so much for being here. It was awesome picking your brain, hearing all of your very insightful wisdom, and yeah, just learning a little bit more about positive self-talk. I think that's something we could all benefit from.
Thank you, Whitney. Take care, sweetie.
You as well. Okay, what'd you guys think? Amazing episode, right? I was the whole time thinking, oh my God, I'm so guilty of so many of these things. The part that really stuck out to me from all of the conversation with Lisa was actually when she kind of called me on my own bullshit, which I appreciated. And I didn't even realize it when I made that comment and I kind of downplayed my own abilities and my own intelligence and didn't even realize it until she called me on that. And that was like, oh my God, I'm aware of this stuff. So it just makes me wonder, how often do we do that kind of stuff without even realizing it? So just be really careful of how you talk to yourself. It matters. It matters a lot for your financial life, for your career, for your personal life, for your overall well-being. So just be very careful about how you talk to yourself. And always go back to this episode if you need to rethink some of these things or just hear that positive message again. I personally loved this episode. It was definitely one of my favorites. I got a ton of value out of it, and I hope you did as well. If you did get some value and you would like to share it with somebody that could use a little positive uplift in their day, I would sure appreciate it. It really helps the podcast, and it helps spread Lisa's message of positive self-talk with the world. All right, guys, that's it for today. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe, you leave me a review, and you share it with anybody that you can think of. It means the world to me, and it helps the podcast grow a lot. Thank you so much for joining in, and I will see you guys next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye.